Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever lost someone you love as the victim of a senseless, violent crime? Have you ever wondered what you would do if you were the Goldmans? Are you asking yourself, how did the survivors get through each day? Do you share their anger and frustration with our legal system? Would you like to tell the Goldman family how much you admire them and how much you support them? If you can answer yes or maybe to any of these questions, I would like to welcome you to Big Media USA. I'm January Jones, the wine tester, inviting you to enjoy my show, Thou Shalt Not Wine, the 11th Commandment. I'm your host, and I want you to join me for an incredible interview with Kim Goldman. Hi, Kim. It's nice to have you on the show.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
I'm really I've been looking forward to this interview, and I want to tell you how very, very impressed I've been with your intention to never speak the name of your brother's murderer in public. I commend you, and for this entire interview, I intend to only refer to him as the malignant narcissist.
Okay.
That term came up to me when I was reading the ghostwriter's description of the killer. Your book is number 5 on the New York Times nonfiction bestseller list. That is wonderful. When I went to buy it, every bookstore in my town was sold out, and I finally had to order it at Amazon.com. Are you pleased about this?
I'll be honest with you. It's a little bizarre. Uh-huh. Pleased is a weird word. Mm-hmm. I think I'm...
Surprised?
I'm surprised. I mean, it's incredibly controversial, and I understand people's feelings about it. And so the fact that it has been successful in that regard, that people have wanted to purchase it for whatever reason, I'm appreciative, I guess is the best way. It's just, it's weird. It's a surreal situation that we're in.
What is amazing is that you give the public an opportunity to make up their own minds by revealing so many facts that most people did not know anything about.
Right.
I'm sure this book was one of the most difficult decisions that your family has ever had to make.
Yeah, we ended up in a situation that it wasn't entirely a decision anymore. Mm-hmm. We were sort of forced into it, and I say that only because our mission has been to make sure that he, doesn't profit, and that he, the killer, honors the judgment. And so every step of the way, it's really been more of it's either going to be him or us. And so when this book came about, we didn't want him to profit, we didn't want him to benefit, and then when it turned out that we partially owned part of it because of our judgment,
right?
And then he forced it into bankruptcy, and then the bankruptcy court ordered us to publish it. It was sort of like, okay, well, I need to reconcile this in my head and try to make it the most amenable to us. So it was just—it's bizarre. The whole situation is bizarre.
Totally.
But yes, the deciding to pursue it in the beginning was very difficult because I didn't know what we were going to do if we ended up with it.
Right, and this is just like your hands were tied. You actually had no choice. You had to go forward.
Right, and that's the interesting thing I think that people were slightly confused about, because when we first pursued the book being shut down back in November, as a result of our efforts, we ended up awarded a portion of the rights to that book because he owes us $33 million. We had no idea what we were going to do with it at that point. We didn't even own the whole thing.
Right.
But because he so desperately wanted the book, and fought us tooth and nail for it, he forced it this way, and because of his actions and because he, formulated that fake company to transfer all the money to, it got put into bankruptcy court, and because of all that, the whole thing got awarded. So,
I know.
Bizarre.
It is. It's a totally an amazing thing. I'd like to share with you and our listeners something that Michael Josephson wrote. He has a column that's called Character Counts.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoy reading it. And he did an article, and it was entitled Flight, Fright, or Fight. And this article describes exactly what families of victims go through. The first reaction is fright. Families go into shock and denial. And it's something you have to personally experience to know what it feels like. Can you relate to other victims and their families when they go through these kind of things?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I remember, you know, like it was yesterday when this all first happened with my brother being killed, that we mm-hmm. needed to make a couple of decisions. And someone had said to me, you know, you're never supposed to make any life-changing decisions when you're dealing with, you know, loss and trauma and stress because you don't have all your faculties about you. And the truth is, anybody that's been victimized, you know, whether it's identity theft or a sexual assault or a victim of a crime like this, you are absolutely traumatized, and it stays with you for the duration of your existence on some level. And, you know, the fright factor, you mm-hmm. know, all of the things that you just said, I think as we move through the process of grief and loss, and you figure out a way to make room for it all, so your decision-making process is less, you know, gets better.
In a minor way, I know what you're going through. My own husband, my first husband, was 32 years old when he was violently killed, and it was explained as an accident. And I was 25 at the time, and I was paralyzed with grief.
Mm-hmm.
And my first reaction was the reaction of flight.
Yeah.
I wanted denial. I didn't want to face it. The reality of this senseless violence just devastated me. And do you find it insulting when people tell you you need to move on or you need to put it behind you?
Yes.
I do too.
I think it's funny. I'm writing a book right now. One of the chapters is like the top 10 stupid things that people say, and I say stupid, but you know, I think what happens is people don't, whether they're uncomfortable or who have never mm-hmm. dealt with loss, you know, they're not trying to insult you. I think they just are struggling with what to say because they see you in pain and just want you to not be in pain anymore.
Right.
So I have stopped trying to argue with those people when they say to me, it's time for you to move on. For me, my brother's loss and the death in his death is so present in my life every day for various reasons. And for me, I've made room for it. I've made room for the pain, for the sorrow, for the fight, for the anguish, for the injustice. You know, but mm-hmm. I also have made room for the joy and the peace and the comfort that I have from my child and my father and my friends and my job.
Uh-huh.
And you make room. It doesn't go away. But to avoid it or to move on from it, for me,
mm-hmm.
Doesn't give my brother the honor that I believe he deserves. And having moments during the day when I am upset or I recall him gives him the time that he deserves to remember him and to love him and to care about him. And
absolutely.
So,
some people actually are unable to do anything but flight.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's people like you who have the support of a family and you are able to fight, and I admire you.
Well, thank you. I also think that, you know, sadly, you know, our case is such an anomaly in the sense that, you know, it was just all over the place for so many years that when it first initially happened, I don't know that I would have been able to flee.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there just wasn't an opportunity. And I remember vividly that when the criminal case ended, you know, because we were engrossed in that for so long, that when everybody went away and the media stopped hammering us and following us, and I panicked because mm-hmm. I thought, what's different in my life? Like, it was bizarre because all of a sudden I'm like, okay, everybody is gone. The comfort circle is gone. And
right.
Oh, my God, my brother's gone. And that's actually when the grieving started for me. And
mm-hmm.
then, sadly, we were launched into the civil case again. So it's been,
you know, sadly, some people, they don't get it because they've never experienced the kind of loss that you've gone through. I know many times I'll be going through the day and I'm perfectly fine and I'll hear a song or some little thing and the next thing I know I'll be in tears.
Yeah.
And have you ever woken up in the morning not remembering what happened? And then it comes back to you?
Remember in terms of my brother being gone?
Yeah, I mean, have you ever woken up and think everything's fine and then...
Yeah, I definitely...
bam.
It's weird to me, and I have to pinch myself.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely have moments where I go to pick up the phone to call him, to tell him things. I'm thinking, what am I doing? You know, there are definitely moments where my life feels very surreal. You know, everything in my life now is pretty much a product of my brother's death. You know, I was on a very different career path. I was living in a different city. I was in a different relationship.
Everything changed.
Is as a result of his loss and me changing the course of my life. My son looks like my brother. You know, he's now asking questions. He understands the concept of death, and he wants to know why Uncle Ron isn't coming to our house. And so
uh-huh.
it's really taken a different
absolutely.
Turn. And so, you know, I talk about my brother all the time now with my son. So I've made him very real to me again. And so it's a trick.
Well, it's good. It's a good thing that you've done that. It's a healthy thing to have these mental conversations with other people who have passed over. And, you know, fighting for someone you love is something you will never regret.
Yeah.
To this day, I regret that I wasn't able to do it. I know it doesn't bring them back, but I hope it will make it easier for you when you meet them again on the other side.
Well, you know, I'm not sure where I fall in that world. You know, I think for me, because I just don't know.
Uh-huh.
You know, I talk to my brother out loud just in case, but I don't really know what I believe. But for me, you know, fighting on his behalf is that I made a commitment. You know, my brother and I were incredibly close growing up. We were all, you know, we were just like this two, you know, inseparable kids.
And you know he would do it for you.
Absolutely.
In a heartbeat. And
I don't fault anybody that doesn't. This is what's been a motivator for me, and his courage and his ability to, you know, I wrote it in the book that he stayed to fight that night, and so will we.
Absolutely.
And I really firmly believe that.
Absolutely.
There's nothing that I endure now that ever comes close to what he suffered and went through that night. And this is my commitment to him, and it motivates me, it inspires me, and it doesn't mean that this is what dictates my life. There's people that I think this is all I do all day long. And, you know, they see me and I'm always crying or I'm always upset.
No.
I actually am, you know, very lighthearted and funny and
you
very
are
optimistic.
Very,
and,
you're very brave. And I want to thank you so much for sharing this with my listeners. And when we come back from our break, I have a lot more questions to ask you. We're with Kim Goldman on Big Media USA. This is January Jones. Welcome you back to The Wine Tester with Kim Goldman, my guest. And we're discussing the book that her family has put out. And it was an amazing book. When I finally found it and got it through Amazon and read it, Kim, I could not put it down. It was so bizarre. Tell me, truthfully, what is your take on this ridiculous thing about this person, Charlie, this Charlie character? What do you think about that?
I believe wholeheartedly that is essentially his alter ego or his subconscious. There's no evidence of another person at the scene, not one iota. But, you know, even if you wanted to go down that path for one second and assume that maybe there was somebody else, the interesting thing about him writing this book is that he doesn't implicate that person. He still puts the knife in his hand. So
it's so amazing. It was the creepiest thing. When your alter ego tells you this is not a good idea, and you still go ahead and do it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
It was total egomaniac.
Yeah. I agree with that.
Oh, my gosh. I just was in shock, and I bet you were when you first read it. Do you have any opinions about all the things that are taking place in Las Vegas right now?
my opinions, I really don't want to. I just don't know. You know, I put my faith in the system one time before, and it failed me. So I don't know. I'm trying to just reserve, you know, any comment in terms of just getting myself worked up one way or the other.
Right.
You know, everybody has an opinion on what's going to happen. I don't know.
You are so emotionally involved. It's hard to talk about it. You know, everyone I talk to, they compare it to the Al Capone story.
Yeah.
You know, Al Capone didn't get put away for murder or crimes, but they got him on income tax.
And we've always joked about that, too. And, you know, the truth is at the end of the day, and it pains me to say this, but I hope that he's treated fairly like any other person accused of a crime. And I mean that in the sense that I hope that he's not railroaded because that'll just come up on appeals. I hope that, you know, if they have the evidence and they have enough to convict him, that he's convicted. And beyond that, I hope if he goes to jail that he is part of the mainstream population, that he's not in his own
private
pretty cell. And, you know, and who knows what'll happen. you know, I have horrible thoughts about him becoming king of the jail, you know. So
absolutely.
I don't know.
It's kind of a creepy situation. Everyone that I've talked to, absolutely, they want to see him go to jail. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
People want to see the system work. I think people were so devastated when that verdict came down. Recently, I was watching Comedy Central, and there was a very humorous comedian, a black comedian, and his name is Chris Rock. Mm-hmm. And what he said amazed me. He said that finally, now, even black people can say that he did it. It's taken a long time.
Yeah. You know, I've tried not to. I don't know how much I feel that it's a racial issue. I hope after all this time and all the things that he's done, including the Las Vegas issue,
yeah.
including the fact that he wrote this book talking about how he could have or might have killed the mother of his children. I hope that people see all of those things as, you know, reflections of who he actually is, as opposed to us, you know, going after him and making his life miserable, which is what people have accused us of doing. So,
right.
You know, we didn't create this.
Yeah,
he's
no.
created all these dumb things that he's done over the course of the years because of who he is and because of what his mental state is. And
right.
so hopefully karma's tapping him on the shoulder.
Oh, let's hope so. This is a person that craves publicity,
yeah.
whether it's good or bad.
Yeah.
And it's such a role model. It's just ridiculous. You know, your brother was a good Samaritan. He was at the wrong place at the wrong time, and somehow it's very hard to understand the randomness of life and
yeah.
how these things can happen. But I'm so happy that you have gotten a lot of support from the public, and people have been behind you and encouraging you.
Yeah, I think that this case, you know, showed people what our system is about and what we need to do as citizens to ensure that we're protected and
right.
that the laws are designed to protect the people that actually, you know, are law-abiding and honest and civil-minded.
That's all we can hope for our children and for the future. It's been an incredible learning curve for your family, and it's been amazing that you've been willing to share it with all of us.
Well, thank you.
I've learned so much, and it's been such an amazing experience reading your book. We're going to be back in a few seconds, and we'll be visiting with Kim Goldman, and she will be sharing with us her journey in honor of her brother, Ron Goldman. Welcome back to The Wine Tester with January Jones and my guest, Kim Goldman. And we are discussing and talking about the book, He Did It, The Confessions of a Killer, that her family has come in control of, and it is being published and sold. Kim, could you tell us where my listeners can find your book?
Well, they have to dig a little for it, apparently. But it is, you can get it on Barnes & Noble website or Borders or Amazon. The bookstores are carrying it, but because of the controversial aspect element of it, I guess they keep it tucked away.
Oh, is that why? Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
but you can definitely get it in the bookstores and online, though. But,
also, I want to share with our listeners the website, confessionsofthekiller.com. I went to that website, and it was an amazing experience. You know, you could actually write a whole book about your website. When I read what your lawyer wrote,
Peter,
The Pursuit of the Civil Lawsuit, that could make a movie. It was fascinating.
Yeah, I really pushed to have Peter's part included in the book because I think it really, you know, so many people are confused
mm-hmm.
as to what happened, and I guess, you know, for us, because we sit in it all day long, you know, it's clear, and honestly, even though I've been lectured and taught where we are in this whole process, I'm still confused, so I can understand how the public, you know, is confused as to where we are. So Peter Haven, his piece was really just a great journey, you know, through this process and how we ended up with the book. And really, at the end of the day, he very much shares my belief that this is our only option. And
mm-hmm.
if my dad and I always ask ourselves, you know, whether it's going to be him benefiting or us pursuing judgment, we're always going to come to us.
Mm-hmm.
So if I can at the end of the day look myself in the eye and know that I'm being honest and I'm acting with integrity and I'm dignified in my actions and I'm okay with what we're doing. And as far as I'm concerned, this was our only choice pursuing this book. And
absolutely. When I hear people talk about the blood money and that issue, I really want to have them read Peter's information. It was so informative, and it so clearly explains why you had no choice and how things fell into place. And, you know, it's like the money is not the issue. This is about justice, and this is about peace of mind.
And it's also, you know, it's those things, and it's also, you know, for us, it's taking away from him. And people get confused when I say it's taking away, that they, you know, they accuse me of being, you know, vengeful.
Yeah.
And that word doesn't apply to me, although I get the definition of it. For me, I don't have a problem with making sure that his life is miserable. I don't have a problem with taking things away, because truth is, he shouldn't have the luxuries that he does because of what he did to Ron and Nicole. So I don't have a problem with that. And the fact that he's so arrogant and he flaunts his freedom with zero remorse, even if he thinks he didn't do it, zero remorse for the loss of life, I don't have a problem with it. And he did this book, he did this deal in a direct attempt to defraud our family.
Oh, absolutely.
Putting the company together with the buy-off of all of his children, putting all of his children in officer positions so they stood to benefit financially from this book, doing it behind closed doors. Like, he did everything that he could to make sure that we never found out about it.
I know.
And he's been doing this for years. This is not the first time this has happened. It's the first time we found it.
Yeah, this was very deliberate and very planned.
Yeah.
And most people haven't a clue or any idea how difficult it would be to even collect this award. It's a large award. It sounds like a lot of money, but it's a travesty, because the problem with it is, here's the award, now you figure out how to get it.
and the system doesn't provide the resources. And I only likened it, I'm in a divorce situation and I can't collect child support. It's the same situation. There's money that is ordered to you and you really have no recourse.
Right.
You just don't, unless you want to then become deceitful and dishonest and manipulative and illegal. You, as a law-abiding citizen, don't have any recourse. And it's really very frustrating.
Absolutely.
Because the people that commit the crimes get away with it more often than not. And that's sad.
On a personal level, my husband and I, we were very offended by the fact that his pension with the NFL was protected and no one can touch it.
He has four pensions, by the way.
Four pensions. Oh, my gosh. Well, let me share with you. My husband was a pilot for United Airlines. And the company, when they exited bankruptcy, they took the employees' pensions.
Yeah.
No one protected that. I mean, they were on their own, and this was the wonderful system. And then to see this man who has committed murder with four pensions, it's just insulting to anyone who's ever worked hard in their life to try to get anywhere.
Well, and you're absolutely right. And I, you know, on top of it, he has surrounded himself by a team of attorneys who vow publicly to do whatever they can to avoid paying the judgment. He has a collection specialist on his team to help him hide his assets. You know, and so he really, you know, he's doing it legally. It's just, you know, that's part of the reason why he moved to Florida. He's completely protected in Florida.
Tell us about this Florida homesteading situation. This is unbelievable.
Yeah, Florida's a debtor-friendly state. So people that, you know, are trying to avoid collections or creditors, you know, they move to Florida and you're completely protected. Your house is protected. Your pension's protected because of some other law. I'm forgetting the name of it right now. But it's a right-to-work state. We can't garnish his wages. And now, because he lives in Florida, we can't collect anything that he does unless he's working in California.
Oh, my gosh. I didn't realize that.
Place of residency is in Florida. So it's really unfortunate.
And it just drives me crazy when I hear this stuff about this Rolex watch situation. Because, you know, it's so sleazy. Because I know the real watch has been put away safe and out of sight. And for him to hand over a fake watch. I mean, how insulting is that to the system?
Well, and on top of it, what I learned through this Rolex situation is that if we collect any of his personal assets, he's entitled to an exemption on those assets, sort of like a deductible. So anything that we collect, we have to pay him $6,000 before we can take any money over and above that. So if we receive that Rolex and let's say someone bought it or we sold it at auction, which would have been what have happened, for $12,000, he would have received six.
Oh, my gosh.
And we would have received six.
Something's not right here.
Yeah, and I think in California it's actually slightly higher, like 125 as it relates to some other issues. So, yeah, it's
that is ridiculous. When I was reading the book, I was intrigued with the fact that the ghostwriter actually wrote his explanation. And what fascinated me was that he leaves no doubt whatsoever that this book was signed off three times and approved. And then to come out later and say, oh, it was a work of fiction, it's just unbelievable.
Yeah, well, the killer, he did a couple of interviews on some internet thing, and I only watched a couple minutes of it, but I believe that he even said on there that he had approved the book, but then once all the controversy came of it, he then, you know, started saying that there was parts of it that were tweaked. It's all true, except for a couple of parts, you know, which is just maddening.
Yeah, it's just
ridiculous.
It's very frustrating. I was interested that your publisher from Buford Books, Eric Kaufman, I thought he was a very brave man to publish this book and to take you forward with it. Did he find you or did you find him? How did it come about that?
He sought, if I recall correctly, it happened so quickly. I think he either had a prior relationship with our literary agent or he sought her. I don't remember, but he really stood out from some of the other publishers because his motivation and his purpose from what we felt sort of was in line with what we felt we wanted to do, and we were, you know, obviously very concerned about the perception. I mean, I didn't sleep for a month. I was just sick to my stomach over this whole thing.
I can imagine.
But he really respected the struggle, the personal struggle that my dad and I were having, and really tried to be very respectful of what was important to us and the integrity of our family and ultimately of Ron and Nicole's memories. And I think he did a very good you know, purpose in that.
How long did – you said it happened so quickly. How long did it actually take – from start to beginning that this book actually was published and
came out? We acquired we were awarded the rights July 30th, I believe, and then it was published and was put out September 15th-ish,
something like that.
But in all fairness, the majority of the book was already done.
I
wrote the intro.
You
know,
it
took me about a day and a half to jot that out. And then, you know, it just happened very quickly. And, you know, honestly, I'm happy it happened that way. As stressful as that process was, I'm glad it was over. This has not been fun.
I know. It's been very difficult and painful. I know Margot Atwell, I know she did a tremendous job with this book and that she is so proud of it.
Yeah.
And it makes sense. And your introduction was so clear and concise. I can understand it, and no one could possibly ever fault your family when they read that and hear your side of the story. When I was looking at the websites, I noticed that there's a lot of blogging that goes on and some fascinating comments. Do you ever read it or do you ever respond to the bloggers?
I read it and I really shouldn't. I really shouldn't because it's very frustrating. I don't respond, although people respond on my behalf. I see my name all over the place, and just FYI, it's not me. But
that's amazing that people would do that.
Yeah, it's very frustrating, and it's saddening to me because I read people who have never met my father and I, but have all sorts of opinions about who we are, how we live our life, and you know, how we don't function and all the things that we're not. It is just really unbelievable. As people are saying how horrible and hateful we are, they're the ones writing all these horrible and hateful things about us. And
I know.
I'm taking it with a grain of salt.
Oh, good for you.
I can't convince everybody. I can't expect everybody to believe what we believe and to fight like we fight. It's not my job to do that. I have to pay more attention to the people that are incredibly supportive, but sometimes
well, you know the American public, they're behind you. When you have a book that's number five,
yeah,
people are passing, you know, when I read it, everyone I spoke to, I said, oh my gosh, you have to read this book because you have to read it before you can actually believe what went on.
Right.
Most people have no idea what your family went through and the travesty that was taking place in our country.
Right.
When I read it, I wondered to myself if you would have done anything differently, or is there anything in particular that you or your dad regret?
No, you know what? I don't live my life with regret.
My
belief, and I'm not just saying this is how it's always been, I very much feel like you do the best with what you've got at the time you've got it. So back in November of 2006, with the information I had at the time, I would absolutely have taken that same position again, knowing what I knew then.
Uh-huh.
Knowing what I know now,
right,
this is the right course of action. And I think that one of the two biggest things that people are confused about, which is what we initially were confused about too, is that it was a murder manual, which, as you now know, it is not.
Right.
And secondly, that he doesn't stand to profit anymore.
Good.
And that was important.
Very important
to us that he didn't profit. And
well, no one would have bought the book had it
right.
been going to him.
But had we also not done what we did, the rights to that book, the book itself would have gone back to him.
Oh,
this past May, the rights would have gone back to him, and he could have gone off and published it all over again.
Oh, that's disgusting. I hate hearing that. I'm
yeah.
so glad you did what you did. I know it was difficult and not an easy decision for any family to make.
Thank you.
But it's something that it verifies the American system, and it does show that eventually, if you hang in there long enough, things can get turned around.
Yeah.
As hard as it is to do. Thank you for sharing this, because so many people need to read your book so that they understand what actually took place. Kim, we have one more segment, and I have just a few more unanswered questions
okay.
that I'll ask you when we come back. This is January Jones, BigMediaUSA.com. This is the wine tester, January Jones, the author of Thou Shalt Not Wine, The 11th Commandment, to be published by Buford Books in May 2008. Today I'm visiting with Kim Goldman, and she is sharing with us her book, He Did It, Confessions of a Killer. This has been an incredible interview, and she has been so wonderful to share her story with us. Before we end, Kim, I would like to talk a little bit about Dominic Dunn.
Yeah.
I am one of his biggest fans. I read Vanity. I can't wait for Vanity Fair to arrive. I think he's brilliant and sweet, so lovely, sensitive, and he really knows what you've been through. Could you tell my listeners a little bit about your experience with Dominic Dunn?
Yeah, Dominic, he was such a gift to us during the criminal case. Young person myself, I didn't really know too much about him, but everybody else did. And Judge Ito in the criminal case sat Dominic next to my family and I, and Dominic and I immediately became very good friends.
Uh-huh.
You know, he always treated me like a daughter. I think people know that his daughter was murdered.
Absolutely.
Years before. So
he has fought the fight.
Yeah.
And he has been right there on the front lines.
Yeah.
And he is so supportive.
And it was a warm face to see every day. You know, he stayed very close to me lovely man. And I knew it was very difficult for him to participate in this book, but he did it because he felt strongly about what my dad and I were doing.
Oh, it was so comforting to know that you had someone there
yeah.
like him, and that he was sharing his viewpoint, and he was kind of like your protector. I enjoyed reading what he had to write. And also his comments about the trial were so astute.
Right.
And he's so knowledgeable about the process, the good things and the bad things.
Well, and he also didn't have to be objective.
Right.
So for me, that was, like, amazing because
yes.
I could talk to him about stuff and he didn't have to, you know, play the straight and narrow with me. So
absolutely,
yeah.
absolutely. That was just so wonderful to read what he had to say. Also, I'll tell you, I have to be truthful. This totally brought me to tears. When I looked at the incredible picture of you and Ron as small children
mm-hmm.
with your back to the camera walking off holding hands,
yeah.
what an amazing picture. You are so wonderful to share that with everyone.
Well, I have to credit one of my attorneys, Peter, again. Peter saw that picture, and
uh-huh.
apparently it had struck a chord with him and had an impact. And when we were talking about the book, he said, I really think that you guys should do that. And, you know, I always love sharing my brother with, you know, as many people as I can. And, you know, that happens to be one of my dad and my favorite pictures. And
It's such a powerful picture. You know, I have one very similar of my three grandsons walking, holding hands.
Yeah.
And every time I look at that one, I cry.
Yeah.
I just, it's very touching.
Pure innocence.
Yes, it's just beautiful. I love that picture. And putting the negative aside, let's talk about some of the positives. Could you share with us some things about the Ron Goldman Foundation and your brother's legacy?
Oh, thank you. We started this, you know, just in the last couple of months. You know, my father and I, for the last 13 years, have traveled the country speaking out on behalf of victims and doing whatever we can with our time. This is the first time that we hopefully are going to be able to do something with monies as well. A portion of the proceeds from the book, both by Beaufort Books and the literary agent, and then as well from us, will start the seed money or put the seed money into the foundation so that we can impact victims of crime and their process through this horrible journey. You know, we're still in the infancy stages of it, but our hope is to assist with resources, both financially and legally if we can. There are some amazing organizations that are already in place that we've worked with over the course of the year. So I think initially what we might do is just work with those organizations to make sure that they're funded and that their programs can continue.
You've got a great mission, and I commend you.
Thank you.
Think that what you're doing is needed, and I think your family, that you are an incredible example that people who go through this kind of thing can survive. As difficult as it is, you know, Kim, I have my own theory that when people talk about why do the good die young, I think the good die young because while they are here to teach us rather than to learn. They are the masters, and they are here to help us get through life. And I know your brother's legacy is a very powerful one because of what you're doing.
Thank you. I believe that.
I want to tell my listeners, this is January Jones, hoping you have enjoyed our show today, The 11th Commandment, Thou Shall Not Wine, with Kim Goldman, sharing her amazing thoughts and memories of a wonderful brother and son. Now, I want everyone to try to remember to stop whining, start smiling, and if that doesn't work, you better start eating lots and lots of chocolate. Thank you, Kim, and I'll look forward to visiting with my listeners again next week on BigMediaUSA.com. This is January Jones. Thank you.